Good afternoon and welcome to another edition of MMA Talk for Pro Wrestling Fans for the week of June 18th, 2018. As always, I am your host, Robert Vallejos, and I'm joined this week by the Brian Adams to my Brian Clark, Mr. Rick Monsey. Rick, how's it going?
Pretty good. Glad to be associated with the infamous tag team Chronic from the WCW days, the glory days as I remember them.
Yeah, I think glory seems to be a very relative term when you speak there, but hey, at least we could be considered friends of The Undertaker, so I guess that would be a positive, right?
Yeah, we kind of look like The Undertaker, and we're the same size. It's perfect.
All right, let's break up this exciting banter on classic WCW tag teams like Chronic, and let me break that up by giving you a chance to get in touch with the show and let me know how you can do that. We got a nice big email segment coming in later in the show, and those emails were sent to the show email address, MMALivecast@gmail.com. That is MMALivecast@gmail.com. But if you don't want to get to us just on email, you want to hit us up on Twitter. We got two accounts to do so at. The main one, @MMATorch, @MMATorch. And the show specific one, MMA Talk for Pro Wrestling Fans, @MMALivecast. That's @MMALivecast. All right, we got the pleasantry and plugs out of the way. Let's get right into it this week. And this is a rare week where we actually get to lead off with pro wrestling talk for a change. Are you excited, Rick?
I'm very excited.
And, of course, we only lead off with pro wrestling if there's a MMA angle to what's going on in pro wrestling, and there certainly was last night, as we had Ronda Rousey's first ever televised singles match in the WWE. She took on Nia Jax at the WWE's Money in the Bank event. Had a good little match that went on for about 11 minutes before there was all kinds of interference. Alexa Bliss cashed in the Money in the Bank contract that she earned earlier in the night, became the new champion, so you essentially had a non-finish for Ronda's first ever singles match. All that aside, what did you think of the match, Rick?
I kind of wanted to hear why you thought it was a good match before you have me break this apart, because I'm going to get some listener haters on me pretty quickly with my opinion. So I prefer you go first to give your opinion so I can become the wet blanket all over that.
Okay. Yeah, and if you follow me on social media, you would know as anti-Ronda Rousey as I've been painted to be at times within her MMA career, I'm extremely pro-wrestling Ronda Rousey. I just think she's very good at it. She's not very good on Raw. She's very good on pay-per-views. She just seems to be able to bring it when the lights are on. Specifically in this match, her ability to just sell like she was getting beat up by Nia Jax. She made Nia Jax look great. And you would never think that somebody in their second ever televised match would be the one making the other person look great. And I'll give Nia credit. I think Nia did her part well. It's the first time really Nia really looked like a menacing wrestler the whole time she's been within the company. She's always billed as that, but whenever her match, she has, you know, kind of very basic matches with a few power moves here or there. This was the first time they really used her size to tell a story. And I thought Ronda was great. I thought the way Ronda was bumping around was just something I didn't expect to see. And it's something that you see, you know, you see wrestlers who have been going at it for a long time that still aren't very good at. And it just looks like to me that Ronda Rousey is a complete natural at this. And your counterpoint, Rick?
Okay, I found myself being pretty bored about half of the match. And we did find out that Ronda Rousey can successfully take a bump. We found that out within the first, 8 minutes. But a lot of her offense still looks sloppy to me, and I know it's early in her career, and I don't know if this match is an example of the template for the future of Ronda Rousey. I don't know if this is the way that most Ronda Rousey matches are going to go, or if this is something that they just decided to do because she's still pretty green. But if this is the template, it doesn't get me very excited. And what I mean is watching a babyface like Ronda Rousey getting ragdolled around the ring for three quarters of the match and then making a fiery comeback towards the end is a tested and successful formula in the WWE. It's worked for Hulk Hogan. It's worked with John Cena, but it's also predictable and kind of a tired formula. In my opinion, this is all just what I think. And the second time I watched this match, it felt like I was watching Ronda Rousey getting thrown around the ring forever. And I was just kind of waiting for her to Hulk up and do her a couple judo throws and a couple armbar attempts. I get it. Ronda Rousey's really new and she's trying hard, but I'm also getting a little tired of Ronda Rousey getting these extra credit bumps because she's performing passably in the ring. But she's getting paid a lot of money, and she has a lot of attention on her, and she's doing okay. But so far, it's not that inspiring to me personally. But I don't know. I don't want to say that I think this Ronda Rousey experiment's a failure or anything like that. I personally think it couldn't be a failure, though, if they try to do the John Cena Hulk Hogan formula of matches. Hopefully this is just the first of a diverse series of matches she'll have in the future.
I don't think that's going to be an issue, because I don't think you can really tell the story they told in that match with a lot of other wrestlers the way you can with Nia Jax. Well, she is kind of short, I think, relatively to a lot of the other women. There's not a lot of believability in a lot of other women on that roster ragdolling her in that fashion. You know, you talk about the Hulk Hogan thing. Well, yeah, Hulk Hogan was facing Earthquake and Andre and the Iron Sheik and all these, you know, these real big beefy dudes. And that was kind of the big boss man. That was kind of his shtick. I don't think that's going to be the case with Ronda, but I do think the tease of the match of Ronda, it's not so much in the hulking up comeback, it's more the what's going to happen when she actually gets to unleash this lethal offense. I think it's a little, it's the same, the concept is the same, but I think the intent is actually a little bit different. But I mean, you say what you said about her performance and taking bumps, maybe we are green on a curve, and I don't doubt that at all. Part of why these matches get so well received is because you just assume somebody in their second match isn't going to be very good at doing these things, and that's part of why it's there. But I think because of the way expectations and the way they go, I think Ronda's really benefiting from that, because there's probably a lowered sense of expectations, and particularly just because how awkward she is on regular WWE television, that so when she is passable in matches, it does seem to come across well. And I'll say this, though, you know, I don't think you're wrong in any of your criticism, but her matches continue to be well received. Do you think, though, there's going to be a tipping point where now we're no longer impressed by the rookie that's able to do so well, and then she just kind of merges into being like everybody else, and then the novelty wears off? Is that kind of what you're saying?
I think it will wear off eventually if she doesn't get better in time. But, you know, people are going to give her some leeway. It's a little different than when you got these big guys who are wrestling right now, and then if they're not, you know, it's easier to kind of be critical of a big guy who, like Cass, you know, people are critical of his performances against Daniel Bryan. Daniel Bryan could have a good performance against Broom, but Big Cass seems to struggle at times. He had an okay night last night, but you're able to – his size and everything is accentuated in the fact that these guys, they get more of a pass by Vince McMahon and more opportunities because of their size and whatnot. So I wonder at some point if Ronda Rousey, her performance is going to – you know, she's been giving all these opportunities because of her name value and whatnot. So eventually we need to get over the kind of – I wouldn't say it's cringeworthy, but there are times during her matches, like when she does a judo throw and it doesn't quite – hit it, or, you know, her shoes are untied. That's not really her fault, but just another thing. I was like, oh, don't fall. But there are certain things that eventually they need to either get cleaned up, or I think people are going to start turning on her a little bit. I don't know, though. I mean, I wasn't like Bruce Mitchell said on the round table that they did last night. I've been wrong about a lot of the Ronda Rousey things myself, and I didn't predict that Chicago would be all in for her. Like they were, but they are.
Yeah, and we might be in a slightly different era than we thought we were in like a year ago, because by your example of the bigger guys getting more leeway, Braun Strowman's never been a good wrestler and is an average talker, and the crowd has absolutely taken to him. There's some people that the crowd absolutely takes to, and Ronda seems to have that with wrestling crowds. That's something I didn't see at all either. I've talked about it many times on this show. I thought, wow, they're not going to receive her well at all, just because of, you know, she fits all the profiles of stuff the hardcore wrestling audience, which you would think would be the Chicago wrestling audience, says they don't like in these part-timers. I do think, while her performances on Raw have been so bad week in and week out, her being there has kind of disarmed that idea with many of those wrestling fans who just have the anti-part-time bias to how they think things. She is there every week, so I think that takes away a little of the sting. And I think there's there's the women's matches in WWE have never had this high standard. Even now that they have very, very good matches, I mean, Sasha Banks is a disaster every time she's out there wrestling. She has way more cringeworthy spots, I would say, than a Ronda Rousey does. Sasha has great matches, has a lot of popularity, and can really draw a viewer in. But there's stuff that happens in her matches all the time like that. So I don't think Ronda is so far off of what the accepted standard for really good women's wrestling is right now in the WWE.
Yeah, no, you got a point, especially with Sasha last night. That back ladder bump she did was awfully hard to watch. I think I'm not trying to totally rain on the first match of Ronda Rousey's parade. I watched these matches. The WrestleMania one was a tag match, and I thought that went really well because they were able to accentuate all her positives, and she didn't have to sell for as long as she did. I'm just not a fan of matches in general. Take Ronda Rousey out of it. I just don't want to watch an 11-minute match where the babyface is selling for 8 minutes of it and then has 2.5 minutes of offense. That's what I got really tired of with John Cena fighting, like, especially when he was like having matches with JBL way back then. It's just like every John Cena match was just him getting beat on and beat on, and then eventually he'd have the comeback, the five-knuckle shuffle. And like you said, maybe the formula will change with the opponent. But for the first match, they kind of, for me personally, did the style of match that I really don't like.
I wonder, and this is a bit of a sidebar, but I wonder how much of that is in the person who's doing it. Because it's hard to believe someone like Ronda in a legitimate fight. I mean, I know pro wrestling's not a legitimate fight, but you're supposed to be presenting it as such, would be getting beat for a long period of a fight. It's hard to see somebody like John Cena, who looks the way he does, who, you know, comes across as a super athletic dude, to go through that in a match. Whenever that happens with like a Johnny Gargano or Daniel Bryan, people don't seem to take as much issue with it. So I wonder if it's more based on who the performer is and the realities that you would place onto that performer.
Well, yeah, and you say realities and realism. One of the things that Ronda Rousey brought to the WWE was reality and realism. You know, she's a former UFC champion, and people are like, oh, she's going to kill these girls. But then she comes out and gets beat on for 7 minutes. And I think I understand why they did it and everything, and she can't just go in there and destroy people like she did initially in the UFC. But I think that she brought some credibility. And I know, and as an example, Brock Lesnar, he had a career in the WWE before he went to the UFC. But when he came back from the UFC, you know, they didn't really so much advertise his past WWE experience. They more were advertising the fact he's a former UFC heavyweight champion. Mm-hmm. And I know that the Suplex City formula has gotten tired lately, but it was credible, and it is credible. He comes out as a bona fide badass. Ronda Rousey, in my opinion, is not coming out as a bona fide badass, which she should be marketed as. She is a badass, but she's coming out as someone who's smiling, has a Roddy Piper outfit on, and she got beat on for 8 minutes, and then she has this fiery comeback. But again, some of her moves weren't as crisp as they could have been. If she's going against someone like Nia Jax, I would have abandoned a couple of those judo throws completely. If you don't think you can get the full rotation, or you don't think they can look as good as possible, don't do them. We'll figure something else out. And the fact she got to advertise that glorious boxing that Edwin had been telling us about for years and years, I thought was pretty funny too. They were like, oh, she really peppered Nia Jax up. I was like, see, she can do it.
Those strikes were I'm very praising on this match. I like the idea of like the MMA fighter throwing punches in the corner on the other wrestler, but yeah, her strikes don't look good. Obviously, they're non-existent in shoot fighting, and they don't look good in a work match whatsoever. Yeah, I thought that part was really, really bad. It seems like maybe at WrestleMania she was really laying it into Triple H, because when they did that spot in the corner, those looked a lot better than what we saw last night.
Hey, PW Torch fans, it's Sam Roberts, the last professional broadcaster, here to tell you about my podcast, Sam Roberts Wrestling Podcast. Every Thursday morning on iTunes, on Stitcher, on Spotify, on YouTube, notsam.com, wherever you get podcasts, you will find it. Interviews with the A-list of pro wrestling, whether it's Stone Cold Steve Austin, Shawn Michaels, Roman Reigns, Daniel Bryan, just recently Corey Graves, Mauro Ranallo. They're all guests of Sam Roberts Wrestling Podcast, as well as regulars like Dan Soder and one of my favorite people to talk about pro wrestling with, Wade Keller. Plus, every week we do a deep dive and analyze what's going on in the world of pro wrestling. This week, with the state of wrestling, Bruce Pritchard calls it the best interview in wrestling podcasts. I don't know if that's true, but that's what Bruce Pritchard says. Subscribe now. Get it every Thursday morning across podcast platforms, or get the premium version at Stitcher.com/NotSam.
Yeah, that's a good point. Those look really good. I didn't have that issue. I think she looked a lot better in WrestleMania. I know there's more bells and whistles and everything, but in my opinion, from the start, I didn't think Nia Jax is the right opponent for her. And I don't even think, I don't know who would have been the right opponent for her, but I don't think in moving forward that Alexa Bliss will be the right opponent either. But that's what we got in front of us. I mean, it's going to be hopefully something she can shine in as far as talking on the mic and whatnot. But she needs to kind of get back her street cred or UFC cred. And she needs to not necessarily beat Alexa Bliss for the title, but she needs to beat up Alexa Bliss, because I don't want to see her sell like that again for a while.
That would be nonsensical. That would be nonsensical if a little tiny Alexa Bliss was, just beating up Ronda Rousey for 10 minutes and Ronda Rousey had to get the power of the Hulkamaniacs, brother, to set her out. I'm interested in the feud, though. I'm interested to see how it plays out. The Nia Ronda feud was just a joke all the way around. I liked that one segment they did where she beat up the jobber. I thought that was kind of fun. But the way they just set it up at that up front, and it was such an unsynthetic thing in an unsynthetic world, it just came across terribly. I'm wondering how this will play out, with Alexa being delusional. If Alexa is the direct opponent, it's the first time we'll actually see her with a comparable. Not you, little blue thing in the corner. That happens every time. Did you hear that?
Did your Alexa go out?
Yes, every time. It went on last night during the event too. It picks it up from the TV. It's in our house. We talk in code. That's not to set the device off. But okay, if the current champion is Ronda's next opponent, it'll be the first one that's actually will be comparable for her. What I mean by that is she hasn't had, I think, what will be her typical opponent. She had a tag match with two Hall of Fame level wrestlers and a really good showman in a Stephanie McMahon, but not someone who is an actual wrestler. And then she had Nia Jax, who her whole thing is that she's atypical of the other wrestlers on the roster. So now we're going to see someone that's actually comparable in size, but someone who obviously has been wrestling a lot longer. And it's another person I wouldn't necessarily trust to carry someone to a match. Whereas I think last night, and I have praise for the match, I think Ronda kind of carried the match for Nia's end. Ronda made Nia look really good in that match. I don't know who can make who look good in this one, but I'm interested to see how this goes. With that said, I'm also interested in the mic work, because they give a lot of freedom to Alexa and all of her feuds, and I think that's why she's a very good character. Even to some people, shush. If some people take issue with her wrestling ability, I don't think anyone can really take issue with her promo ability and the places and the lanes they go with. I'm very curious to say what kind of mean girl things the Raw Women's Champion can come up with and throw at Ronda and the responses that Ronda will give. I think that is as exciting as anything, and much more exciting than a potential match between the two.
What do you think about Ronda's facial expressions and everything? I mean, besides the match and the moves, what do you think of just Ronda's presentation?
I hate the walkout.
I do too.
I was saying I was thinking about it last. I was much more angry about it last night, just because that's not her brand. Like, Ronda is the smiling, happy-go-lucky person when she's doing. Well, there was a time when she was a smiling, happy-go-lucky person on, certain media interviews and stuff. But then when it came to fight night, Ronda was coming to the octagon, with that pit bull look on her face. There was an article that Bleacher Report did a few years ago before one of her fights, and it talked to all her past opponents about what it was like in the moments before facing Ronda, because, she had the snarl and she was slapping her shoulders and did that whole thing that she was doing. I think that should be the case here. And it's not like this is a respectful bout. It wasn't billed as that. It was billed as two people that got at each other the Monday before, two people that are going to go head to head. So that I don't like. Through the course of the match, I thought her facials actually were pretty good. They weren't as overdramatic as they could be. I thought she was fine with the way she presented herself in that element. And I don't know how much of that was a work and how much of that was her just, kind of reacting to things that are going on And because there are times, even in her MMA space, where Ronda is just unnatural. And that's something I wonder about when I see wrestling analysts talk about how badly Ronda's coming off and how unnatural she is, or how awkward she is. And I'm thinking to myself, that's just Ronda. Ronda has always been that way. That's kind of who she is as a public figure.
Yeah. Do you think WWE at this point is trying to get any Ronda's UFC fans to come over? Or do you think they basically said she'll get who she can get, but... You know, I've noticed a lot of the MMA media didn't even cover this match happening for the championship. I think that a lot of the MMA sites have kind of like cut it, you know, like we were wondering when they would do that. And it seems to have happened for the most part already.
Yeah, I think, though, there's a distinction between Ronda's MMA fans and MMA fans. I think those are two different distinct fan bases. I think there was a certain fan base that she brought with her and a certain set of eyeballs that she brought with her that helped grow her star power that probably, although we don't really have the data to back it up one way or the other, that she has brought a lot of that attention with her. I don't think general MMA fan who kind of had moved on from Ronda and is, you know, really excited about this card in Singapore, I don't think she's brought that fan over yet. But it's hard to say because, and this is just an issue you have with modern wrestling, especially without pay-per-view, it's so hard to quantify who's a draw and who isn't, you know, because you quantify that strictly on social media presence and all that. It's really hard to quantify what she's bringing over and what demographics she is bringing over to the company. So I think she brought her fans over. I don't know if she brought the MMA fan over.
Yeah, neither do I. It would be an interesting poll to do or something like that, because just reading, you know, again, bottom of the barrel sort of comments and opinions, but even just reading her on Instagram, I know a lot of her UFC fans are getting annoyed how she's talking and treating her social media as if, you know, she's in kayfabe mode. So she like posted these photos and the captions read, you know, "I almost won the title if it wouldn't have been for at Alexa Bliss," or whatever. And it was just kind of funny just to see what the people wrote. They're like, "She does know it's not real. And why are you treating this as real?" And so there seems to be a really distinct line for some people.
But I mean, and I'm not saying this to all of them. I'm saying this to a very small. There's just some dumb MMA fans out there. Let's face that. I mean, everybody who knows an MMA fan knows at least one dumb one, and especially in terms of the relationship of MMA and pro wrestling. And we've done that segment on the show a few times. You know, pro wrestling makes MMA guy mad, and I kind of stopped doing it because all I had to do, it was just low-hanging fruit. You'd have to go to whatever Ronda Instagram post there was, and there'd be like 14 of that exact comment over and over and over again. And it's like, yeah, get real, guys. We all know what's going on. I'm not Wade Keller, where I don't have this strict standard of how I feel wrestlers should behave on social media, but whenever a wrestler does stick pretty strongly to kayfabe on social media, it does warm my heart, so maybe I am in his camp on that. So I do appreciate that Ronda's taking this, I think, except for the smiling, which is just like a personality quirk, Ronda's taking this as seriously as possible. Again, no pun intended. She does very much seem to be all in. I think we're seeing that month after month. Like this may be a cash grab for her because she's going to get paid a lot of money, but we've seen other celebrities come into pro wrestling and care much less than it seems that Ronda Rousey is doing at this current point in time.
Yeah, I find myself more interested in this Alexa Bliss match, like you were saying, all the things that go into it, more than I was about this Nia Jax match. I'm just glad the Nia Jax thing's over, you know. And then I know we got the first singles match out of the way. Now let's actually start seeing what the real Ronda Rousey template will be. And fingers crossed for me personally, that's not the Hulk Hogan, John Cena template, because that's not who I think she is.
Yeah, and we've talked all about, you know, how this match played out, but getting a sense from your presence online and who you've talked to, the match was what it was, but ultimately, did it work?
Yeah, I think I'm one of the only people who is bashing it, and I'm trying not to be. I'm just trying to constructively criticize it, but everybody seems to be on board with how well it did. I haven't really seen any negative reviews, except for the people who were strictly just Ronda Rousey MMA fans, and like you said, didn't cross over. So yeah, it worked for just about everybody. I'm tentatively interested still, but I'm very cautious in giving praise to Ronda quite yet. I need to see more of a picture, but It was successful all in all, and most importantly, the crowd seemed to love it in Chicago. That match was over.
Yeah, it really was. People were into everything, and it wasn't that long. And so that I think that might be the key for Ronda. If she can keep people interested, something doesn't have to go for 25 minutes and be a Ric Flair classic. If people are into it and people like it, then it's very much a mission accomplished. Well, one more thing on her. Her appearances on Raw are so bad week after week. Do you think she just needs to be on Raw less, or does everyone just have to grin and bear it, and then the pay-per-view is ultimately the testing ground? Where are we at with this?
In my perfect world, she gets Paul Heyman as a mouthpiece. I just think that it would be great if she had someone with her to kind of like Natalya or someone, just someone to help kind of bounce back and forth, or just her by herself, like you said, mean mugging and then giving the surprise face and everything like that. I don't know if that's something that she'll be able to ever fix. Didn't she have all these movies lined up and now they're gone? And I don't.
There's been a lot of delays in her films. They advertised one last night, actually, during the Money in the Bank. So there is one coming out, but there were several delays, and the word always kept coming out of it. It's because she just really can't act, and we've seen that. Like she might be a great pro wrestler. Pro wrestling is a form of acting, but not all actors can be wrestlers. All wrestlers can be actors. We all can't be Dwayne The Rock Johnson. That's just not the way
just
the world works.
Just because you like Ric Flair doesn't make you Ric Flair.
Right. And so, whereas I think she could be a good pro wrestler, she clearly isn't a good actor. And I just think that's her. She's a very strong personality in that way. And I think it's hard to adapt to be someone else. I don't ever think Ronda's being fake. I can criticize how Ronda is being and acting, and I think sometimes it can be childish and petulant, but she's never really been disingenuous, in my opinion, in many ways.
Wow, man, petulant is a good word. I'm writing that down right now. Petulant. Yeah, perfect. I agree.
I got my thesaurus right here, so it's what I think of the word. I'll put it in, and then hopefully it fits the sentence that I'm saying.
That could be her little... That could be a nickname right there, like if you go back to UFC and you don't want to go to Rowdy anymore because Beck Rawlings is kind of using that now. It's like, well, petulant's nice.
Yeah, I love the idea of Buffer going, petulant, Rowdy.
I think that all in all, though, with Ronda Rousey, what she serves, the purpose she serves, hasn't changed from when, we were talking about the ESPN deal or everything like that. Just having her part of the WWE programming makes WWE look good. And so hopefully, we can start getting good performances every Monday night to lead up to these evolving matches.
Yeah. Is she the biggest star in the company right now?
When Brock Lesnar's not around, yeah. I mean, Roman Reigns, you can grade him as big of a star as he is or isn't, but it's hard to say because even Daniel Bryan seems to be defined down quite a bit from when he said he's coming back. I mean, he's just been sitting there, with big casts, and even Daniel Bryan's not really even a crossover star or anything like that. So who do you got? You got Ronda Rousey. If you just take this pay-per-view alone, this is where most of their 9-to-5ers are. You got Ronda Rousey. You got AJ Styles, you got Roman Reigns. I mean, Ronda Rousey's the name that pops out.
Yeah, I would say John Cena is still their biggest star, as much as he's still associated with them, because he still keeps that association. He, does all the movies and shows up on the reality shows. But and maybe it's The Miz right there. The Miz might be the next guy. But yeah, you get the feeling Rousey's the most important piece they have in that puzzle right now. I mean, I think that like a Daniel Bryan, they recognize he's a greater star than they maybe thought he was 4 or 5 years ago. But I think there is a ceiling on that type of star. Real quickly, I do want to pat myself on the back. I wrote an article on January 2nd, 2017. And the headline here was, "The Rousey story includes ridiculous hype, preferential treatment, hubris, petulance, unwilling evolution, but also a Hall of Fame career." How's that? How's that for some word salad?
That is, you just got a thesaurus for a brain. See, I'm struggling even with the word thesaurus. I lean on you for all the vocabulary. I just say the basic words, but you really bust it out. It's incredible.
for the record, Wade put that headline together. I just used all those words within the article. So, but I had all those words, but it was just funny because that whole headline is just an amalgamation of all those like unnecessary words just being put together all in one. That's great.
That's great.
Before we move on from more pro wrestling talk, what did you think of Corey Graves and Jonathan Coachman going back and forth during this match?
This, is funny, but man, it is distracting. It's especially during the bear hug situation where Nia Jax had Ronda Rousey in a bear hug and, Coach was like, oh, she can rest. And Corey Graves is like, how do you still have your job? And they're just going back and forth. It was funny, but I think Todd Martin pointed it out. It just sounds like they're arguing to make Vince McMahon chuckle. It's not for us, the fans, like we can laugh about that. But you're taking away all the intensity away from this match. And so I get really annoyed with that stuff personally. It just really makes me appreciate NXT.
Yeah, Coach really seemed to have himself a heck of a night on Twitter, especially. I woke up this morning and, on Twitter it shows you, the things you may have missed. And it's nothing but like wrestling journalists and just people in general just dunking all over Coach and like on ridiculous things he has said in the past. Like, wow. I can't think of a more disliked person right now within the company other than Coach. Like, and he doesn't seem to get why he's disliked is my favorite part of the whole scenario. Like, a guy like a Joe Rogan knows why he arouses, some anger in other people. I think Coach has no idea. Coach probably thinks he's, he's a swell guy, and that may well be the case. But Coach has no idea why the wrestling fan and wrestling media seems to lack all respect for him.
Yeah, didn't you just work for ESPN? Like, you were around sports. You can help make this seem like a sports-like atmosphere, and this match has stakes and everything like that. But just sometimes if you don't have anything good to say, don't say it at all for Coach, at least. And
he tries to bring that sports thing there, but it doesn't always fit.
No, not at all.
And that's, sometimes, it is sports entertainment, so sometimes you are telling a story. And then people just bring up, like, some ridiculous things he said about, oh, yeah, Vince pays all his wrestlers, the retired wrestlers, year-round as long as they show up at Access. Like, okay, since when? That's...
Is that a thing?
And then he said, nobody in the business has ever spoken to the Observer, which I thought was great. Cause like, we know that's not true. Like, it's just one of those things. Like, you could tell me the sky is green all you want, but I could just look out my window and I have proof to the contrary. And then I love the blue check mark on Twitter that just engages with people because you can't win. Like, if you're going to go down that road, you'll never win unless the person that's trolling you has a great deal of misspellings. You're never going to win that argument. So it seemed to be a bad night for Coach. And every time Rousey goes out there and has a positive performance, everyone likes to point out how 3 years ago Coach said the WWE would never have any interest in her after back-to-back losses. I don't know why I get such gratification out of Coach being wrong with that, but I just do.
Yeah, it was silly, too, because if anything, people wanted to see her even more because it was like radio silence after that second loss. I mean, she was incredibly marketable, so...
Yeah, that was the case of Coach thinking he's got the hands, his hands on the pulse of everything, and then turned out to be just a fool with everything he said.
Yeah, Corey Graves put him in his place a couple times. Do you think people who like the younger generation, all you guys out there who listen to this and girls, if you're under the age of 20, let me know if you guys think of this announced team as like they're good, because back in the day I used to like JR and the King and, that I missed that. And even like NXT, I like that, like I said, but there's something about the announcing, and this is a whole bigger argument, but do you guys actually enjoy this? Is this what do you, Michael Cole, is he kind of like make you feel like you're at home listening, having a beer with a buddy and watching some wrestling matches? Or do you get as annoyed as I do every single Monday?
It might be how like I view MMA commentary in that I could take it or leave it. Like it doesn't distract from the show so much for me, but it also doesn't add a ton. And other people had different opinions on that. I'm sure that's how like the current generation feels about this team. There's, they've never had that moment of, good God Almighty, he's broken in half. They've never, they've never had those. No one on this team has had one of those great calls before. And even like when Michael Cole had great calls, it was in that era, so it kind of got buried within that. So I just don't think there's a strong connection. I don't know. That's a good question.
Yeah.
MMALifecast@gmail.com. Let us know if you're under 20 and you've enjoyed commentary in your life. Let us know why and what we can do to help you out with that.
Yeah. How is that possible?
So, Rick, last night when Coach is really taking a beating on Twitter, what would you recommend he did after he turned off his phone? Is there anything anything he should have drank maybe to sort of calm his nerves after just getting that flogging on Twitter?
Yeah, absolutely. You should have gone home and just try to open a nice bottle of wine. Hopefully it's a one with a cap, not a cork, because if he struggled with that, he might have just given up altogether.
Well, before we go down a really dark road, let me tell you about Wink. That's W-I-N-C. What Wink does is it makes it easy to discover great wine. Because Wink's wine experts select wine matched just to your taste, personalized for you, and shipped right to your door. And they start at just $13 a bottle. There's nothing like coming home to a box of delicious Wink wine selected just for you. It's the best day of your month. I mean, last night might have been a bad night for Coach, but whenever his Wink comes in, I'm sure he'll be in a much better mood, and he'll tell you all about it on Twitter. All you got to do is fill out Wink's palate profile quiz and answer simple questions that the average store clerk wouldn't ask or translate into a recommendation. Questions like, how do you take your coffee, or how do you feel about blueberries? Then what Wink does, they send you wines that are curated just to your taste. The more wines you rate, the more personalized each monthly selection becomes. And each month, there's a bunch of delicious new wines, like the insanely popular Summer Water Rose. There's no membership fees. You can skip any month, and you can cancel any time. Best of all, shipping is covered. If you don't like the bottle they send you, they'll replace it with a bottle you'll love. No questions asked. Discover great wine today. Go to trywink.com/pwtorch, and you'll get $20 off your first shipment. That's trywink.com/pwtorch for $20 off. trywink.com/pwtorch. All right, Rick, let's go to a commercial break. And on the other side, let's talk some actual MMA.
Searching for more great pro wrestling talk? Then join me, Jason Powell, host of the free weekly Pro Wrestling Boom podcast. Each week, you'll hear the latest news and analysis from me and my team at ProWrestling.net, along with other pro wrestling media members. Plus, the Pro Wrestling Boom podcast features long-form interviews with notable names in the pro wrestling industry. Subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, Downcast, and all your favorite secondary apps, or visit us directly at pwboom.com. Once again, that's pwboom.com.
Don't forget, send us an email, mmalivecast@gmail.com. That is mmalivecast@gmail.com. Rick, we didn't have a ton of MMA to review this week, but we did have a major news item coming out of an MMA fight. You had the season premiere of Dana White's Tuesday Night Contender Series happening this past Tuesday, and one of the two contracts awarded was to former NFL player Greg Hardy. Now, if that name sounds familiar to you, it's either A, because you read MMA websites and they've been talking about him a lot lately, or B, you remember back from many years ago when he was at first convicted of domestic violence, but then had his charges overturned due to a technicality and was kind of shamed off of the Carolina Panthers in the wake of the Ray Rice controversy back in 2014, goes to the Cowboys for a year, gets in a string of like minor incidents with the Cowboys, but there definitely was issues there, and then basically falls out of the NFL, can't get picked up again, starts his MMA career, has this fight on Dana White's Tuesday Night Contender Series, and here he is with a UFC contract. Your thoughts, Rick?
A UFC developmental contract, yeah. I was surprised of, well, I'll talk about Greg Hardy personally in a second, just as his character and what you just had discussed, but just as far as the fight itself goes, that was a sloppy 57 seconds of heavyweight fighting, and it was actually kind of impressive. I don't know how good his opponent was, though, but he seemed to have power, and they were both kind of similar in experience and size. But
also an NFL player, his opponent, Austin Lane.
Right, yeah, exactly. And then Austin Lane, I mean, he was knocked out pretty cold. And Greg Hardy, I mean, he looked like there's something there that can be worked around, but I don't think he should go in the UFC right away, and I don't think Dana does either. And so they're going to, I think, put him on some other promotions like an LFA or CEM or something like that and see him develop. With that being said, though, when one of the nice things about the Contender Series is that Dana White does kind of like he talks with the press again, and they asked him about 10 minutes worth of questions, and I would say about 8 minutes of those were Greg Hardy and the decision to bring him in with it, all the things connected. And Dana White, to paraphrase, is basically saying like he paid his dues, and now he, you know, everybody needs a second chance. And so that's why he says he's giving Greg Hardy. And while I do believe in second chances and whatnot, what Greg Hardy is accused of and what, you know, he allegedly did is something that has already upset a lot of MMA fighters, that he's being associated with the UFC brand. And you're taking a risk if you're Dana White. You know, Dana White seemed to be very concerned about taking the risk with Nick Newell and just having one hand and getting beat up real bad on TV. But he's taking, in my opinion, a bigger risk of bringing a Greg Hardy in and then, you know, possibly winning a championship. You know, it seems unreasonable, but 6 years down the road, who knows? And will this be something that affects the UFC, especially now that they're going to ESPN?
Yeah, it's not good. And it's not as simplistic as some people say, well, you know, you get convicted, you don't automatically, you're not barred from employment the rest of your life. That is true. But let's be realistic about what's going on here. Greg Hardy is essentially being rewarded for bad behavior, because Greg Hardy would be on nobody's radar had he not be so infamous for his domestic violence incident that he had, which was very gruesome. And I recommend go on by the archives on Deadspin, where they actually published the photographs of his girlfriend's back and just awful things that he did. But had he not been involved with this issue, and even when I say had been involved with this issue, it sounds like you're sugarcoating. Had he not beat his girlfriend, he would still be in the NFL in his prime. And so he would be doing that. He wouldn't have a path to the UFC, and he wouldn't be as noteworthy. They got a ton of clicks and a ton of headlines off of Greg Hardy being there on Tuesday night. If he is someone, say, like an Austin Lane, I don't think the path for him is as quick and as clean. It just seems like he is actually being rewarded for what he has done, and the whole thing just feels ugly. It feels ugly to talk about. The whole thing feels awful. And look, there's a lot of baggage in the UFC. There's guys that probably should have been cut and guys that weren't cut, and then some guys that were. So it's very arbitrary. We're going to talk about this a little later on. It's very arbitrary the way the UFC enforces these things, but it seems ridiculous with the shorthand, you know, zero tolerance that Dana White seems to have for everybody else in the world, but yet, you know, Greg Hardy can just kind of come in here with this awful reputation, and it's just like nothing ever happened.
Yeah, I'm looking at these Deadspin pictures now that you mention it. This is pretty horrific. That being said as well, with Dana White saying second chances, I wonder if Paul Daly at all was like, really? Like, do you think Paul Daly ever thinks, like, if I know he punched Josh Koscheck in the after the bell of a fight, and that's bad, but as far as if you want to start weighing what's worse in situations, I mean, this is, yeah. I didn't ever see the pictures until this moment, so you're getting a live reaction to it. This is not good.
No, yeah, and it does, you know, like I said, whenever you say the words, the domestic violence issue, that kind of really sugarcoats it. You know, you kind of have to see what it is. And again, if that didn't happen, Greg Hardy was a very good player in the NFL. He's still in the prime, his athletic prime. He would be in the NFL. He's not in the NFL because of this. And the NFL gets no credit whatsoever. He was in the league no problem until the Ray Rice incident happened, and then people were pointing out stuff to the Panthers owner, who has since been disgraced himself for some other issues. And then with the Dallas Cowboys, who, you know, the Dallas Cowboys have this reputation of being the refuge for bad behavior within the NFL after you're disgraced everywhere else, something that the UFC apparently wants to co-opt with them. But he had issues with the Cowboys, too, showing up to meetings and all this stuff, and you had Jerry Jones always defending him. Oh, well, he's a leader. And it just was BS. He's just a bad dude. There's no other way to put it. Not a good guy. Hopefully he is reformed in his personal life. Hopefully that is something, a conversion he's made. Dana White made reference to him having some substance issues. Hopefully he has cleaned all those up. But again, he's only getting this opportunity because of his bad behavior. I can't rectify that issue.
Well, yeah, the big picture too, you know, what is the phrase you said? Just because his employment future, just because he's still employable. I forgot, you said it earlier, just a couple minutes ago. And I had basically, just because you serve your time and stuff doesn't make you unemployable in the future. That may or may not be true, but it doesn't guarantee you have public employment, is my argument. Just like with, right, Hulk Hogan, you know, Hulk Hogan's trying to get back in the WWE. He's like, you know, I've said what I said or did what I did, but I want to come back. And people are they're like, well, maybe the WWE should bring him back. It's like, well, not everybody's a guaranteed public employment. You're not guaranteed to be paid to be in the public eye anymore. If you have been in the past, you make a mistake, or you do something that's not a mistake. If you commit an offense, or if you say something, if you do something, you can go find a job somewhere else, but it doesn't have to be a place where we're watching it on television. You know, that's not the be all end all for every person, and athletes especially. You know, there's a lot of football players that after their football career is cut short, or they've had a whole career and almost retiring, you know, there's a lot of not a lot of other places for them to go. And that is what it is. It happens in every sport, MMA, boxing, whatever. So he found an alternative revenue source for himself, but it's in the public eye. And Dana White even said, you know, he's going to be, no matter what, that's going to follow him around forever, those details. But it's also going to follow the UFC now as well, because they're partners with
him. And they're taking like the heat for this along with him. It's not like he's just a guy that's going from place to place. They're receiving that criticism. And that's just, like you said, it is what it is. And I want one last point I'll make on this. We don't need all this whataboutism with this stuff. Just because the UFC never cut Rumble Johnson doesn't mean they are obligated to bring in Greg Hardy. Just because Ultimate Warrior was a terrible person who was being celebrated doesn't mean they need to bring back in Hulk Hogan to the WWE. Just because one thing was awful or is hypocritical doesn't exonerate someone else. And that's just something I think needs to be said and put out there, because that seems to go on a lot with the discourse in general.
Yeah, and the Dana Whites and the Vince McMahons aren't the moral standard bearers for everybody else, you know, just because they think something, if they allow something to happen as far as like having Greg Hardy employed or giving him a contract or Vince McMahon bringing a warrior back, you know, just because they did it doesn't make it okay, or it doesn't mean you have to agree with it. You know, everybody can question everything, and if they don't like it, say it. And a lot, that's happened a lot right now to the UFC. A lot of reporters and a lot of journalists aren't crazy about the fact Greg Hardy's part of the UFC now.
Let's move on to something kind of funny. That involves Dana White. Did you catch the video of Dana White and Matt Serra being involved in a wrestling angle in Memphis?
I did. Is there another video that's beyond 33 seconds, or is this the full video? But like Dana White being held back.
Well, it's on the Looking for a Fight feed, I think, too. And so there might be more context to it. Yeah. What'd you think of that?
I think Dana White looked like he was having a really good time, but he also didn't know quite what to do, because his main the person he was dealing with was, I believe, the valet to the wrestler. And so he didn't want to like grab her and shake her or anything like that. He was just kind of trying to hold her back. But I just thought it was kind of funny that that he seemed kind of out of place. What'd you think?
Yeah, there's a certain naturalness that he had. Like he very much is the real life Vince McMahon in many, many ways. He has taken that persona on in a very pro wrestling style. I just thought it was weird, because it's strange that he's involved in this. Like, what a weird time we're living in, where Dana White specifically has taken such steps to not be associated with pro wrestling, and it's understandable in some ways because he wanted to legitimize his sport. But so what kind of life are we living in where he's just doing angles in Memphis with Jerry Lawler? Like, what the heck is going on? It's just weird. It seems out of character, and it kind of goes to the assessment that some have had that Dana White doesn't care anymore. And I think this might be the case. Not that it's just so silly that he's involved in pro wrestling. I'm not taking that angle. I'm taking the angle of this is something that would that definitely seem to violate Dana White's prior code of ethics so much. And now he just kind of does stuff because.
Yeah, because he's a billionaire. Like, he doesn't care. And it was just something that – it got a lot of, eyeballs on his show, and it's kind of funny. It's kind of cool to think of him and Jerry Lawler having a conversation. I would love to be a fly on the wall for that one. It's kind of weird, too. You know, it's this show is perfect timing for what's happening right now out there, because, like we were saying, MMA and wrestling in a lot of different ways are – intertwined, and it's just so interesting to see Dana White involved in a wrestling angle. I think that's kind of what the significance of it is, more than anything else, more than what actually happened in it, that he actually got in the squared circle and played along and covered somebody.
Yeah, he must have sort of like, you know, be as that comfortable in his own skin and who he is in the business world that he can do that, which I think is actually speaks kind of highly of him in a lot of ways. And I know we do bash him a lot. But yeah, to your point about the crossover, think about this. Like, here in a couple minutes, we're going to talk about Jon Jones versus Brock Lesnar being reignited. We opened the show with Ronda Rousey wrestling at Money in the Bank. Last week, we talked a lot about CM Punk and his UFC fight. Like, yeah, everything is intertwined right now to a degree that probably hadn't been since maybe like the early 2000s when people didn't know like stuff in Japan, what was a work and what wasn't. I think this is the closest we've had to that as far as the two being so wound together.
Yeah, it's a good time. I'm enjoying it. It's fun to see the fans bash the different groups and everything, because I think we should all just become friends, because as popular as UFC and MMA is too, there's still a stigma about MMA fans to a certain extent. It's a different kind of stigma than wrestling fans have, but it's still there. Like the tap out t-shirt wearing MMA fan that drives a big truck and just wants violence is pretty similar to the wrestling fan as well. So we should all just be friends. We're all on the same side, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think the MMA fan has the stereotype that wrestling fans had maybe like 20 years ago as like these unruly backwoods folks who like violence. And like the MMA fans occupy that space, whereas wrestling fans are now the message board nerds who've like never had a girlfriend who sit behind their keyboard and they're like in that comic book nerd kind of thing. Yeah, and I do think that they should probably come together, because they're both unfairly, you know, classified in a way with certain very general stereotypes from moments where both those entities went mainstream, and that's how people feel about them. And so I just don't think MMA fans are as defensive about that as pro wrestling fans, because MMA fans might have a stereotype attached to them, but you don't tell, you know, nobody ever says, hey, you know, what do you do? Oh, I like to watch UFC. And nobody says, well, you know, it's real, right? Like, nobody ever said that to a UFC fan the way, you know, when you stress over telling somebody you're a pro wrestling fan, you're like, well, how well do I know this person? Or, you know, are they, you know, going to be intellectually prepared to discuss this with me? What are we looking at? That's something that MMA fans have never quite had to deal with on that same level.
No. I agree.
All right. Speaking of MMA and pro wrestling, why is Brock Lesnar versus Jon Jones becoming a thing again, Rick?
It's not going to happen. I really don't think this fight's going to happen.
That's what's so stupid. It could have happened last year before the Jones drug test, but we're seeing these rumors that Lesnar's going to show up at UFC 226 to confront Jones. What, are they going to fight in Ryzen? Like, what is going on? Like, why is this a thing? Why is this picking up buzz? Why is Dana White talking about it?
Yeah, why is there odds out for it? It's like, who cares? This is not going to happen. Did we all forget that GSP and Anderson Silva, at one point during a GSP fight, they were showing Anderson Silva like in the corner cam when they would show like the corners like tending to a athlete in between rounds. They're showing Anderson Silva watching the fight like, oh, this is just about to happen. That was more likely than this fight happening. Both the fighters were active. Both the fighters were just a division apart, and neither of one of them were at the time getting involved in all these drug issues or wrestling for the WWE. I mean, this is so unlikely to happen. And quite frankly, at this point, I don't want this fight to really happen. I think Brock Lesnar is going to get destroyed if it happens.
No, I want it to happen. It's just it's not in the realm of things that can happen. So, like when we this is one of the early things we discussed on this show quite heavily when the show first kind of got off the launching pad, and you were just, you know, Rick from Alaska on the phone. We talked a lot about this fight because it looked like it could be a reality if Lesnar would have re-entered the pool. As soon as Jon Jones failed that test and facing a possible 3 or 4 year suspension, this fight became nothing. And that's why, and I think that's why the momentum for Lesnar's UFC return hasn't been so quick, because I think maybe he still wants the fight. But if he does want the fight, he's going to have to wait a couple years. He'll be like 45 by the time the fight could actually happen. Yeah, I don't know why it's become a thing. I don't know why Jon Jones is going on Twitter and breaking it down like systematically. What could it, you know, well, I wouldn't want him to take me down, so I got to get it. Like, Jon Jones is giving like credence to this. I think it's just really the way it bones to stay in the headline while there's like nothing going on.
Well, yeah, what else is he going to do besides just train and hang out? I mean, he probably doesn't have – I don't see him on any Burger King commercials or any endorsements like that right now. Like, He's just got time on his hands. And it's funny, too, because Jones, like, he had that fight, that rematch against Daniel Cormier, and he was kind of back on top of the hill until he got in trouble. But he's kind of been watching Conor McGregor from the outside for quite a long time. And Conor McGregor, you know, is like I said this last week, Conor McGregor, out of any other MMA fighter, owns social media. And so maybe John Jones is trying to, well, if I can't fight, maybe I can just tweet and stay in the news that way.
I'll always wonder what the animosity is, maybe not personal animosity, but maybe professional jealousy that John Jones will have for Conor McGregor, in that, like, in the era where it was supposed to be his time, and his time to be, you know, a guy late 20s, early 30s, just on top of the sport, running through everybody. He couldn't get in the octagon. Well, Conor McGregor, someone who is a good fighter, but I'm sure John Jones views him as such a less, you know, impactful fighter in between the octagon, just took over the sport and changed the whole game. I'll always wonder how John Jones really feels about the McGregor rush.
Oh, I think he has to be jealous. They just won't. He won't admit to it. I think just about every UFC fighter has to be jealous. But that, then they say, I let my fighting, or I let my talking happen in the octagon. You know, I don't need a trash talk. No, you need a trash talk. I think everybody should take a lesson in trash talking, even if you don't do it necessarily. It, you know how the WWE at one point was having the wrestlers take promo school or promo classes, and arguably promos have gotten worse with every year. But maybe they could do the same thing with certain fighters, and it could get better and better and better. Kobe Covington needs to take some classes on how to articulate a little bit better, you know, because he's right. Almost there, but he's just not. There's just something about it. And
well, we see it with Ronda. She's a great trash talker. It's a little bit different than cutting a promo.
Yeah. Yeah. And I have a question. Do you think the John Jones, Brock Lesnar fight being reignited in on the tip of people's mind and a possibility has anything to do with the fact that Floyd and Connor fought? I know it's been a while since that fight happened, over just about a year, right? This happened in September.
Yeah.
But you know, that showed that these impossible fights can happen.
Well, whenever it was being talked about initially, when it was, like I said, a tangible reality last fall, we said on the show, like, that's our version of Mayweather McGregor. That you know, Brock versus Bones is kind of like a nonsensical fight, but guys that are close enough in size that it can actually be sanctioned by a commission in that same way, and would just, you know, it has no business happening, but everybody in the world would have an opinion on it. Exactly. It's funny, though, that like a year after all that died down, though, that it reignited.
Yeah, and it'll reignite next year, and by then, like you said, Brock Lesnar will be 45 or 55. He'll have his Viking beard, and he'll be hanging out in Canada, Minnesota.
We talked about this before. I'm really looking forward to middle-aged Brock, just to see visually what that looks like.
Hopefully he doesn't go the way of certain fighters who just get a bunch of tattoos over where their muscles used to be. I'm not going to say anybody's name.
Well, you know, Brock already has the most embarrassing tattoo in a sport that's littered with embarrassing tattoos. I think Brock Lesnar won the prize on that one, so I think he can lay off the ink for now.
Yeah, I agree.
All right, Rick, let's go to another break. When we get back, we're going to go to a really giant email segment, so let's get ready for that.
And a good email.
You love pro wrestling podcasts, but you might not have time to listen to all of them. We'll help you decide which ones to listen to and keep you up to date on the ones you're missing at pwpodcasts.com. That website features written recaps of all of the top pro wrestling related podcasts, including Steve Austin, Bruce Pritchard, Edge and Christian, and so on. Check it out. It's pwpodcasts.com, your home for written recaps of all pro wrestling personality hosted podcasts.
So, Rick, we got ourselves a couple of emails to read. They've been sitting in the hopper for a little bit. We had each of these last week, but we had a lot going on with the pay-per-view to review and Money in the Bank coming up and all that stuff. So we put it off to this week. I would recommend, though, if you have an email for us, especially like these question-based emails, we got a few long-form stuff coming up, like Rick teased on the other side. There's some pretty good emails. So send us an email. MMALivecast@gmail.com. MMALiveCast. And the first one we're going to read comes from best friend of the show, Valentin from Russia. Let's read this and then we'll respond to it. Hey guys, it's Valentin from Russia, and today I'm continuing your conversation from a couple of weeks ago. Now, real quick, let me step in. I would believe that this is in reference to the TV deal show we did a couple of weeks ago. That kind of has the relevance to what we're talking about here. Okay, back to his email. Speaking of UFC ESPN deal, I am just happy that nothing will change for the international side of Fight Pass. Because for me, subscription to Fight Pass means that I can watch every UFC fight, excluding pay-per-views, on it. Every prelim and fight night, including the ones that are on TV in the U.S. Sometimes I am watching UFC events on Fight Pass just because I don't like Russian announcers. So let's stop right there. So Valentin, hey. Yeah. Valentin is apparently like a bitter wrestling fan in that he can't stand his commentary either. So I love that. That fact.
Yeah, it's just as bad here.
Yeah, we all feel you. I considered watching TakeOver this weekend on the Spanish feed just to see what it was like, but I decided not to, just for the experience. Like, I want to watch something fresh in a different language. I think that'd be cool.
It's like watching soccer in a different language. I just like the enthusiasm.
But Japanese wrestling, some hate to watch English commentary for New Japan. Even if they don't speak Japanese, they just like the ambiance of the native language.
Yeah, you can tune it out. I think all wrestling and MMA especially, they need a no announcer option, especially like Dana White Contender Series. Come on. So we are in agreement with you, Valentin. Very, very good on that. Okay. Continue. Okay.
For me, new UFC TV deal means that there will be a little bit more UFC talk on Russian TV. Because we have a cable channel centered around American sports, and they air studio shows from ESPN with Russian translation. Well, that's kind of cool. So, I mean, the mainstreaming of the UFC that's happening with ESPN seems like will benefit at least in the Russian market. So that's good to hear. I mean, that's going to tie into some other stuff we're going to talk about later, but very interesting. And now, Valentin had some responses to Rick. Rick had some questions about how the UFC event was being promoted and price in Russia, the one coming up. And here's what he said. In answering Rick's question on UFC events in Russia, they decided to come in with the cheap tickets. Cheapest ticket is around $25. Floor seats are around $510 to $520. And pretty good lower stand seats are now $200. It feels like they're really testing the market with this event. They're using about half of a huge indoor arena that holds 35,000 people in full configuration. The only fight announced right now is Alexei Oleinik versus Mark Hunt. Some fans are upset that Zabit's fight is announced for a pay-per-view in September. A lot of people thought he will headline this card or co-headline the Russian card. Thanks, as always. Well, thank you, Valentin, for sending that email. And we really wanted to know how they were doing things with that Russian card. Were they going to go cheap or were they going to go high-end? And it looks like from the sense we're getting from Valentin, they're actually getting cheap. So they really want to make a good first impression and get it into people and ingrained in that area. Any thoughts on that, Rick?
Yeah, I do feel like it is kind of disappointing that Zabit can't be in that show. I know that Dana White is pretty high on him right now, and they wanted to put him on the pay-per-view, but I thought, who knows what's happening? Maybe he's not ready physically to be at that particular show, and the timing of the pay-per-view works a little bit. I don't know, just all speculation. I think the one thing Oleinik and Mark Hunt is a good fight, but I'm wondering too if the UFC is thinking the pricing the way they are because they're concerned about the quality of the card.
Yeah,
we're going to talk about the
right.
We're going to talk about lack of quality on a card at the end of the show, but sometimes when you get these new markets, and it's just been announced, and there's not a lot of foresight into what's happening, and there's fighters get injured, contracts work a certain way, and you don't know who you can put on it. You don't want to overprice a fight night when you're like, ooh, maybe. I mean, and plus, it doesn't always mean that people are going to want to go to the show if it's just local people. Zabit is a good fighter and he's entertaining and he's local, so I understand him being there. But just because you got a bunch of Russian fighters on the Russian fight night doesn't mean that the Russian public will want to see it. They want to see what everybody wants to see. They want to see the big names. They want to see exciting fighters. And the UFC might not have that in the cards for them. I don't know. I hope they do. I hope Valentin gets to go to a good show if he ends up attending it. But that makes me a little concerned. What do you think?
Yeah, and it's the level of card you're presenting, too, because you're not doing a pay-per-view. It's not like you're going to put Khabib on a fight night. So that was initially a strike, I think, against it. Immediately, but we saw it with the WWE, that crowd in India, they liked Jinder Mahal, but they probably really wanted to see John Cena and Brock Lesnar. in that, you know,
yeah.
This is the globalized society we live in. You have access to this, and there's nothing wrong with promoting the local, but that's not the entire formula all the time. That's just a piece of the formula. I think you're dead on with that one, Rick.
And you know what, Valentin, I'm pretty jealous of the situation you guys got going on there, because every time I try to watch a UFC prelim or fight night on UFC Fight Pass, it's blacked out in my area of the United States. But you guys get to watch it, and just, you know, it's the most streamlined possible way you could do. And that's amazing. And we can't have that here. We have to, like, I was just going, trying to figure out how to get my ESPN other than using Sling, and there's no other way. And it's going to be annoying because I won't be able to DVR and all these issues. But I mean, if I could pay extra just to watch my fight night events on UFC Fight Pass and pay for the pay-per-views like I already do, that would make things so much better. I'm so jealous.
Yeah, when I first subscribed to Fight Pass, it drove me crazy because you would see a past event. And I understood pay-per-views were different because they didn't come with it. But like a really bad like fight night from Missouri that happened 2 nights ago, oh, let me catch up on that. And oh, no, this is blacked out. You got to wait 30 days or whatever for a free card. You know, that's a
– yeah.
You know, it seems weird.
I actually emailed the UFC about that. I was like, why is it this way? And they're like, because the TV paid for the exclusive rights of it. I'm like, come on. Please. I'm tired of this. So I'm happy that the ESPN deal isn't going to affect you guys, and you can watch it through UFC Fight Pass, and I hope you guys get a good card.
Yep. Thanks, Valentin. Email us again. We always very much value your correspondence and value your listenership we have for a very long time on this show. Let's flip on over to Jessica Zarella, who sent us an email. Jessica sent us a nice email a couple of months ago, right around the time of WrestleMania, where it was kind of a primer to MMA is how we framed it. A lot of generalized questions. Jessica, if you recall, said she hasn't really watched a lot of MMA. She watches a lot of pro wrestling, but listens to our show and kind of, you know, wanted to get some insight onto what we were talking about. So we really like hearing from Jessica. We really like to provide these type of segments because I feel that in a lot of ways, our show isn't the MMA podcast for the hardest of the hardcore MMA fan. It's MMA talk for pro wrestling fans. So if you're a pro wrestling fan, you do your stuff with the Torch and listen to Bruce Mitchell and Todd Martin and the Deep Dive with Rich Fan, but you want to, you know, talk a little MMA, we're kind of the show for that. And that seems to be the niche we're filling here for Jessica. And she has a few more questions that I thought were very interesting and some that are very timely. So we wanted to get to it this week. Let's read the header of her email where she just says, "Hi, thanks for all the hard work on the podcast. I've taken your advice and started to ease my way into the UFC and Bellator. This week's fight with CM Punk will be a nice crossover from WWE to the UFC. Spoiler, it wasn't."
Sorry, Jessica.
Yeah, try again on that. Okay, and she has some questions, and she apologized for the randomness of her questions, which I thought was kind of funny. Okay, her first question is, and it's kind of a one big subcategory, gory. Does the UFC have any policies like the NFL when it comes to legal troubles for their fighters? For instance, if you do something to break the law in the NFL, more often than not, you are punished by a game suspension or fines, etc. Does anything like this occur in the UFC or Bellator? Well, for a lot of these questions, first off, let me get this out of the way. UFC contracts are generally very tightly guarded. They're not a public company, and even contracts in a public company are not always widely available. But people have been pretty tight-lipped traditionally unless they're dissatisfied with something about what's going on in UFC contracts. The biggest insight I think we've ever had into this came back in 2013, though, when Jeremy Botter and Jonathan Snowden of Bleacher Report, Jeremy Botter acquired the document and Jonathan Snowden broke it down, Eddie Alvarez's UFC offer. So there's some insights in there, but it's not universal. So anything we say on UFC contracts, take it with a grain of salt, because it's not something that's just so widely known and so widely available to the public. With that said, yes, there are clauses that they can be punished for poor behavior similar to that of the NFL, but it's much more arbitrary. It seems to go on what Dana White and his partners think they should do. It's much less of a public theme because it's much less visible the way in the NFL where, you know, you have issues and then there seems to be somewhat of a standard, although in the NFL they renegotiated this in 2011 with their last collective bargaining agreement. I don't think if they did it again they would have as much power to the commissioner's office in the NFL the way they have it right now. In the NFL, it's actually a very similar situation. You just see it enforced a lot less in the UFC. In the UFC, you tend to only see bad behavior punished when it's on, like, on the UFC's time or directly affects the UFC's business. If somebody gets a DUI, say, outside of the UFC, you generally don't see that affecting their standing within the company whatsoever. Rick?
Yeah, I mean, classic example, like you said, if you get a DUI in real life, but you go back and fight next week in the UFC, that wouldn't be as drastic as it would be in other sports. But on the other hand, if you push a referee, you know, because they stopped the fight too early in your mind and you lost, then you can get kicked right out of the UFC. Like, no questions. I've seen that happen a couple times to fighters. Or if you're Conor McGregor, and I know she mentions Conor McGregor in a following question, the rules are completely different from you to you than anybody else.
And then she does ask you about McGregor. She asks you if he'll be facing any trouble from the UFC due to his legal troubles, and it doesn't sound like he will, to be quite honest with you. Mm. Dana sort of said he made the case that these things happen in other sports and much, much worse. That's true to some extent, but not – I mean, the LeBron James hasn't, like, done this, you know, somewhere else. That doesn't really happen in other sports, but I don't think he will. And, you know, he could say, oh, well, we haven't booked Conor till this got done, and he could kind of hide behind that. My guess would be no. Do you think differently, Rick?
I mean, most likely Conor McGregor will not get in any trouble from the UFC for this. In fact, if anything, the UFC might use McGregor's legal troubles as part of the negotiations when they start talking to him about his next fight, because at one point he was talking about co-promotion. You know, if he was going to fight on a card, put McGregor Entertainment or something right under that pay-per-view title. But now they can be like, well, you know, you did just destroy one of our buses and hurt a bunch of people, so why don't you just fight Khabib for us and let's get back on the winning path. And they're going to use this whole blow-up he fights Khabib next in the promo videos. I mean, you're going to see Conor McGregor throwing a dolly through a bus in the commercials and trailers leading up to that pay-per-view.
Yeah, I just don't see that he's going to have repercussions from the UFC in any way with this. I think the one-day anti-Conor McGregor PR tour that Dana White went on was the extent of the punishment that he's going to receive. Mm-hmm. She also asked in this subset of questions that now that the UFC is going to be a part of ESPN, do we see them moving forward with a policy like this, you know, more stringent now that they're going to be more mainstream? I would say no to that. And I think whenever you're thinking of that question, Jessica, you're thinking of how, like, pro wrestling has worked with the USA Network having such an influence over the WWE. You know, when the Hulk Hogan thing broke, the first thing we heard about was USA was the one that really got the ball rolling on saying, you know, get Hogan off of our television. Traditionally, with sports leagues and the networks, the leagues have had more leeway. The leagues tend to dictate what the networks do and not the other way around. So I don't see that becoming a thing unless the UFC wants to do like what the WWE tends to do on occasion and put this public face on, you know, do this PR campaign. Go back to the Greg Hardy, Ray Rice issues back in 2014. When that happened, Stephanie McMahon came out and said they have a zero tolerance policy for domestic violence. She just kind of said that seemingly randomly. They did amend that to their conduct policy, but that's the only way I would see the UFC doing something of similar stature. I don't think that'll actually happen. I don't think that ESPN will dictate anything like that, and I don't think the UFC will change. They're already on ESPN. I don't think they'll change to be more palatable to ESPN necessarily by doing something like that.
No, if anything, ESPN will just kind of hold the UFC over the coals if something happens with one of their fighters outside of the fight, but UFC can just ignore it. Dana White seems to ignore a lot of things, that a lot of controversies, and I don't see him changing his mind just because he gets on ESPN.
Support what we do here at the PW Torch Livecast when you shop Amazon. Simply go to pwtorch.com/Amazon. We've simplified the page. There's a big Amazon logo. You click on it, it takes you right to Amazon's homepage. But because of that small detour, we get credit for your visit, and we get a commission on anything you buy on that shopping trip. That's pwtorch.com/Amazon. Thank you very much for your support.
All right, now we're going to get into the hot topic section of her segments. Hot topic isn't hot topics, not the store where the Young Bucks sell T-shirts, but it's here. I'm not sure what the general procedure before matches is versus a sporting event. For instance, do they do a national anthem, etc.? If they okay, let's answer that part about the national anthem. National anthems right now in MMA, especially with the UFC, are done at the beginning of a card. Now, back in the day with Pride, or occasionally on Bellator events, and with a lot of boxing events, and I think you can back me up on this, Rick, they do the national anthems literally right before the main event, with both fighters standing in the ring with their respective nationalities. They're more part of the show of the main event. UFC events, the national anthem happens before, you know, at the beginning of the event. Rarely is it televised either, for, you know, on the card itself. Anything else?
Yeah. Well, in fact, in boxing, they do both the national anthems for the fighters that are from different countries, but they take it a step even farther by exchanging mini flags amongst the two fighters in their camps. And it's kind of cute watching the two fighters struggle to hand each other little flags while they're wearing their big boxing gloves. It's something that they haven't quite streamlined and figured out how to make it not look as awkward as it does, but it is quite hilarious. I don't think they would do that.
Yeah, they should probably just trade gloves like the way soccer players trade jerseys. They should probably just like make Pacquiao can cut off his glove that has like the Filipino flag on it and hand it over.
Yeah,
they can do that. Okay, but
here's your blood back.
Yeah, your DNA. And she wanted to know, though, the reason why she asked this question, if they do the national anthem, do you see there being controversy moving forward with kneeling the way that you have in the NFL? The NFL right now is trying to create a rule to penalize those who kneel for the anthem. Do you think like that could occur in the UFC? I'll say no pretty firmly. Do you have anything to comment on that first, Rick?
Yeah, the UFC has barely had anybody's national anthem played on their pay-per-views or television broadcasts, and hopefully they're paying attention to the NFL and just going to stay far away from it, as far away as possible.
Yeah, it wouldn't be an issue in general in the UFC because the fighters aren't out during the national anthem, so it's not really a thing, which was the case in the NFL until like 4 years ago when the NFL started contracting through the U.S. military. The players, you were in the locker room traditionally before that. The national anthem is a relatively new thing as part of the broadcast, and it's not even really part of the broadcast. It is now because of the controversy, but it's not a thing. It wasn't a thing that the players necessarily were involved in any such way during a regular season game.
Do you remember? Did Conor McGregor, when he fought Chad Mendes, did they do the national anthem during that fight? I should have rewatched. That just popped into my mind because I know they had singers live, right? Sinead O'Connor sung Conor. Yeah, everybody's going to be yelling at their radio, you know, their podcast, being like, "No, they didn't. They just did the intro song." So as I remember, Chad Mendes got his intro played live, and so did Conor McGregor. I do remember that, but I do have an idea. We were talking about Kobe Covington. If the UFC wants to ramp up Kobe Covington's heat, they should have Covington sing other countries' national anthems. And, of course, he would make a mockery of it, I'm sure. But he can get, like, true visceral hatred if he does that. That could be a thing he does. He can, instead of having an entrance song, he could just be singing their national anthem as he walks to the octagon.
That might be bad just because there's, like, you know, there's other countries where you do have – there is actual laws on – on disrespecting the anthem. There, you know, no such thing technically actually exists in America. Wasn't it Chris Jericho in Brazil that almost went to prison because of something he did with the flag over there? So, yeah, that would be a great heel maneuver, but I don't know if that would really work out the way that Covington wants to work out. I don't think there's ever going to be an enforced rule in MMA simply because they're not employees. So that would seem almost impossible to enforce something like that. There's been a lot of questions on the legality of it in the NFL, where NFL players are employed by their respective teams. A contracted fighter is not employed by the UFC. So something like that, I don't even think would necessarily be enforceable. With that said, the UFC is the one mainstream American sport where the fighters and some of the fans tend to lean right more often than not, and the standing for the anthem is an issue that the right in America right now has seemed to co-opted on their side. So I don't even think it would be like a it would be controversial if it happened, but I don't think that it would change much in the UFC, even if they did put a boilerplate statement out there. I just don't think it would ruffle any feathers in any way within the UFC and within the fan base whatsoever.
Plus, UFC has so many international fighters. Yes. You know, the NFL is predominantly American football players, but it's like, on some cards, you know, you got 12 fights, it's 24 fighters, and less than half of them are from the United States. And so what do? Do you play just the United States anthems? Do you just play everybody's anthem? I mean, no offense to the people who love the stand for the national anthem at every single live event they go to, but I like the anthem just as much as anybody else, but I need my MMA shows to be as short as humanly possible. I love MMA, but the pacing, especially on the FS1 cards, are terrible. And the last thing I need is the main eventers to come out and stand for their national anthem. That's the one thing that kills me about boxing, too, especially watching some of these international boxing cards. It's just like, oh, my God, hurry up.
Right, and it has nothing to do with patriotism or anything like that. It's a show.
No.
They're putting on a show with all
timing.
That. So it really, and the international aspect is a big part of it, too. I know, like, with the MLB All-Star Game, the NBA All-Star Game, both those leagues have teams in Canada. So during their All-Star Game, they play both the American and the Canadian national anthem at the start of it. But that makes a little more sense. There's no way in the UFC, like, you could play every fighter's national anthem. You'd be there for, like, 30 minutes of just national anthems at the beginning of an event.
You know you could do it. You just play them all at the same time.
Yeah, that would sound terrible. Okay. I think we got to move on from that one. We're going nowhere very fast. Okay, Jessica actually asked a practical question on this next one. She wanted to know, this past week, which would have been a few weeks ago, we talked about how one of the fights was getting time cut. What causes the committee to establish a time cut on a match, and do matches weigh any differently on status due to the time they are allotted to? For instance, would a match won in 3 rounds out of 3 weigh any different from a match won in 3 rounds out of 5? Jessica, what I think this is and excuse us for talking so fast over this maybe in the past to not make this clear. In the UFC, it's very simple. A championship fight or a main event is 5 rounds. Every other fight is 3 rounds. So when we talk about, you know, like I think we were talking about Holman Anderson wanting this to be a 5-round fight. What all that would mean is it would be moved over to a card where it would be the main event. So therefore, it would be a 5-round fight. I think that's what we were referencing. But yeah, I mean, I think it would be great if like all of a sudden there wasn't time left in the pay-per-view feed and they just announced that, oh yeah, this is now a 2-round fight. Go at it, boys. Wouldn't that be great?
Yeah, that'd be so great. They're like, listen, y'all, Romero. We got this pay-per-view is going super long, so you guys are just gonna have to wrap it up in 2 rounds. I'm sorry, go out there. It's not for the title. Just knock yourself out. 2 rounds, best out of 2.
They end up like DDP and Goldberg, and you have to like show it the next week because you get cut.
Yeah,
off.
Yeah. Then Whitaker, you're gonna win both rounds because he's gonna be gassed. Goodbye.
Good stuff there. She did ask him a fourth question. She wanted to know. She's not sure if it already exists, but do you think with the deal with ESPN, there could be potential for UFC talk shows or segments that appear on SportsCenter? Would it be in ESPN's best interest to advertise the UFC and talk about it more to gain better viewership of their fights? Well, I think in that initial press release, they indicated there's going to be pre- and post-fight shows along with studio shows. So that is going to be a thing. And if you go back and listen to that ESPN episode, we did talk about how once you're in the ESPN family, just by osmosis, you're promoted a whole lot more on that network. So it's going to be something in that sense that should be a positive for them. And yeah, obviously it benefits the UFC, especially even if a fight that they're not directly promoting something on, say, pay-per-view, a big Conor McGregor fight, the more the eyeballs they bring to it, well then, you know, there's always a correlation between how well prelims do and buy rates. So all that would work out seemingly in the favor of the UFC. What do you think, Rick?
Yeah, ESPN has already started doing this by hiring Ariel Helwani, co-hosting the new weekly program on ESPN Plus, Ariel and the Bad Guy with Chael Sonnen. And I like listening to Chael Sonnen's analysis on MMA topics and upcoming fights, so it should be interesting. And Ariel is more of a journalist, he's more fact-based, and while Chael Sonnen's more opinionated. So I think they're going to bounce nicely off each other. And I'll probably watch their show more than I watch any post or pre-fight shows from the UFC.
Yeah, that's what we said on FS1. They're just generally not very good. But the Ariel show,
yeah,
you know, that will probably be pretty entertaining. Two pretty entertaining guys who are very different from each other, like you said. So that should be some very good stuff. And Jessica closed it out with a fifth question, which I thought was really interesting here. She asked, how do UFC and Bellator contracts work? That was the first question. Let me just, like I said earlier, we don't really know. There's some info on Bellator contracts, and usually it turns out that they just make very little money. But we don't know for sure. We only have, like I said, this one document from 5 years ago of Eddie Alvarez's contract. And she wanted to know, she was listening to us talk about how after a fighter would come in up, you were hoping the UFC would let a fighter go if they lost. Let me clarify that. I don't think we've ever called for someone's job or hope somebody gets fired. I think we're saying maybe like it might be in their best interest to not fight again. So let me clarify that, because that sounds very callous when you read it in print. Okay, so she wanted to know, how does the structure of contracts work? Are they fight-to-fight basis, certain win percentages? Thanks again. Yeah, it's pretty complicated, but the gist of it, a fighter gets signed for so many fights or a duration of time. Now, that's the fights they are guaranteed sort of by the UFC. They're guaranteed that, but they can terminate for a various reasons, whether it be, you know, bad behavior on the side, you know, making the UFC look bad. You can be terminated for losing. That was in Eddie Alvarez's clause. You could be terminated after the loss of a fight. A bunch of different reasons why you could be terminated. So they can do that, and you would kind of be out of money. Now, they do kind of force you to fight, because you could breach your contract by not fighting. We've seen that with Yair Rodriguez, where there was, you know, issues with him and Dana White, and because he had turned down multiple fights, they used that as cause to release him and then brought him back. Of course, in very short order. Mark Hunt, who's in active legislation against the UFC, has said the only reason why he's still fighting on this card is because he's contracted out to these fights. He has to fight him. So they are on a fight by fight basis. There's also a clause that if you're a champion, it's kind of hard to retire as a champion or to let your contract run out as a champion. I guess you really can't Bret Hart the whole situation here, because your contract can get extended if you are a champion. So you don't need any Montreal incidents happening there. Win percentages, yeah, that's a little more tricky. It depends on the card they're fighting on, where they are in the card. Certain fights on pay-per-view, particular title fights, the fighters in the main events will get what they call pay-per-view points. That's based on how many pay-per-views are sold. And then it's, you know, some fights you have a win bonus. Some fights there's no win bonus. There's performance bonuses. So there's actually... That's what's funny, because some people will say, well, yeah, UFC fighters do make a lot of money. Well, they have the potential to make a lot of money, but there's all these variables in between that affects how a UFC fighter is paid.
Yeah. And to go back to what she said about you were hoping UFC would let a fighter go if they lost. So typically out of the two of us, that's me saying that more than Robert. So when you hear that I'm hoping that a UFC would let a fighter go if they lost, it's rarely based on me knowing the fighter's actual contract status. I usually say this in three different situations, which, Robert, I'm going to just lay out real fast. Situation number one is if you're a fighter past your prime, seemingly, or you're just losing a lot. For example, when we had Rashad Evans fight last week. For those of you without UFC Fight Pass and didn't see it, Rashad Evans was knocked out in 53 seconds. I said on the last podcast that he should retire from fighting or the UFC should let him go. Rashad is a veteran and possibly has more fights on his current deal with UFC, but he's also lost 5 fights in a row and should be let go. So that's example number one. Would you agree with that, Robert, for the most part, for the first example? Okay. Second scenario is when a fighter is not entertaining regardless of their win-loss record and they just bore me and I want them off my TV. There's so many examples of this that I would take a whole podcast to list all of them. So I'm not going to list specific names, but sometimes from week to week I do name a person and their name has been synonymous with me not watching the fight or my eyes glazing over when I find out they're on the card. You can fill in the blanks there. We've said it a bunch of times. There's some people on this upcoming fight card who would fit that category. The third and last example, which is a rare one, is when the UFC fighter who is winning and entertaining would be better served in another MMA organization. But like I said, that situation doesn't come up very often. In fact, I could probably only think of one example. So those are the only reasons why I would say a UFC needs to let a fighter go or a fighter needs to leave the UFC.
Who is that again?
Rory McDonald, I think, made a good choice
that,
to leave.
It really worked out for him well, I think, and worked out for Bellator.
Yeah. Well. I think Musashi should have stayed. But yeah, so I'm sorry for the confusion, but I'm going to keep saying it. It's almost kind of just a thing we say. You know, they should get cut. Like, it's just kind of like a, it's almost, I, you know, I don't mean to be spiteful or passive aggressive. It's just something that, you know, it's like, eh, you know, either the person is losing a lot, is past their prime, or we just don't want to see them on our TV.
Jessica, thanks for that great email. It really helped us get some discussion, get some information. Hopefully, you know, people learned some things. Hopefully, we learned some things. Hopefully, you know, we learned some things about Rick that maybe we didn't want to know, but we certainly have all that going for us. Let's go to one last break, Rick, and when we come back, we'll quickly break down the UFC card in Singapore that you're so hyped for.
Rich Fan, formerly of the Primetime Friday Livecast with Bruce Mitchell here. I want to tell you about my new show, The Deep Dive with Rich Fan. On Saturdays at 6 p.m. Eastern weekly, join us as we dive into a single subject, some weeks as serious as race, gender, and stereotyping in wrestling, to as fun as which IC champs could fit into another era, and anything in between. We'll have guests from inside and outside the Torch family to cover the subject of the week, and of course your calls and emails. Prior to each episode, I'll put out on social media the subject and some notes. Places where you can also bone up on the subject of the week, if you're so inclined. I'll also devote shows to two of my favorite international promotions, New Japan Pro Wrestling and Progress. All are welcome. No secret handshakes here, because Saturday nights on the livecast are officially all right for diving.
We know you're a pro wrestling fan, but you might like MMA too, and if so, check out our sister site, MMATorch.com, with live fight event coverage, including UFC pay-per-views, previews of all UFC and Bellator events, the daily news digest, exclusive columns, flashbacks, and much more. Check it out. If you're a fan of MMA, you'll be a fan of MMATorch.com.
Yep. So, Rick, are you going to wake up at like 3 in the morning to watch this fight card from Singapore this weekend?
Heck no.
I'm disappointed in you, man.
No way. 1:30 in the morning is when the early prelims start. There's no way. I'll still be drinking. I'll need to go to bed. No. Nope.
Okay, well, that should give you any indication of how important this card is. It's a weird card on top of that. Like, it's just – like, there actually are names on it, and you wonder, like, how did we get here? Like, what – we have some really good cards coming up in the weeks following this card. That we've talked about the summer slumber a little bit on this card. You know, the back end of the summer looked really good. This part of the summer, though, we just kind of have to get through this this little period. We got Jessica Rose Clark and Jessica I facing off in the Battle of the Jessicas. Not our Jessica from the email segment, but another Jessica. And again, what a weird fight. Two names, but does it seem like they should be getting a prominent spot on a card, like, anytime soon?
Well, I mean, Jessica, I know. The UFC really wants her to work out. You know, she's been on a huge losing streak. She won her last fight, but yeah, I'm not a
fan.
What
does she have on Dana White doesn't get cut?
I know, it's unreal. But on the other hand, though, Jessica Rose Clark, I mean, she beat Paige VanZant in her last fight, and she's good, you know. She beat Beck Rawlings and she looked pretty good, but she just fights two decisions, and her two of her out of her three wins have been split decisions. So, I mean, this is not a fight that's going to, in my opinion, finish. And, you know, the only win that Jessica I has had since 2014 is the one split decision she just had. So this is going to be a fight. It's going to be back and forth. I'm not going to say it's going to be that entertaining, but it'll be a split decision, and no one will feel like they really learned anything with this fight.
In the co-main event, we got Owen St. Preux, OSP, taking on Tyson Pedro. I wasn't aware that OSP had even lost his last fight. I thought he was still on his Von Preux choke streak. Do you expect him to get back on track here?
I really try not to make predictions on OSP because he is so unpredictable. Like, I kind of have a grudge. You're going to learn a lot about me in the show. I put some money on this parlay, and it was one of the first parlays I almost won, and OSP was my deal breaker, and he lost, and it was against Volkan Ozdemir. So now we know Volkan Ozdemir is really good, but ever since then, I can't put any predictions. And when he got fought Lir Latifi, he got destroyed too. That was awesome. That was really cool. So I don't know. I'm going to go for Tyson Pedro, actually. That's my pick.
And in the main event, we have Donald Cowboy Cerrone doing his monthly UFC fight going up against Leon Edwards. Cerrone actually won his last fight against Medeiros, which was kind of shocking because he was on a big losing streak here. Does he start a new losing streak, or does he dip right back down? How's it going to go for Cowboy here?
Well, these two guys seem pretty respectful and chummy with each other during the media meeting between these two guys a month or so ago. Like, they were patting each other on the back and shaking hands. And I think we've said it before, where Donald Cerrone is not old, but he kind of gets this like veteran respect from his opponents. And I think that is when Cowboy is at his most dangerous, when he's being friendly with his opponents. Poor Yancy Medeiros learned that the hard way by getting TKO'd in the first round by the first fight. I think that when opponents give Cowboy too much respect and, you know, and too much leeway, he takes advantage of it, and that's when he wins. And so I think Cowboy will get the win here and continue to fight in headliners of poor countries, and not poor as in like money wise, but I mean poor as in like poor Singapore. They have to have this is their main event.
Yeah, it's funny. Cerrone's only 35, but yet they talk about it like he's Hoist Gracie's age whenever he comes out for these cards. It's just so active that like there's, you know, at some point in your UFC fandom, you have watched him. I think that's what it is. So he just kind of, and he's always such a well received fighter. From fight fans around the world, there is a bit of giddiness that seems to come every time Cowboy Cerrone steps foot in the octagon, which is, you know, so often. So, yeah, I don't really have a good feel either way on who's going to win this one, but hopefully this will be happening like right when I'm waking up, so I can just tune into this, and then if there's anything else that's notable to catch, I'll catch wind of it one way or the other.
Yeah, whoever put this Fight Night card together and the Ultimate Fighter card right after it, you know, on July 6th, they should get a talking to, because these are weak cards. And I don't mean to disparage all the fighters on either of these cards, but you just had a stacked Chicago card in which you could have taken any of those fights from any section of the fight and put it on the top three of either of these fight cards, and it would have helped out tremendously.
You put Anderson and Holm on this one? And suddenly it's like, wow, what a good card they're having there.
I know. And,
China. Yeah, I'm pretty sure whoever booked this just hates the people of China. So that's.
What the heck? Yeah. I mean, like, I'll be watching it. Don't get me wrong. A lot of these cards like sneak up on you, you know, and they end up being good. But this is not something that, I mean, only hardcores will be watching it because it's on UFC Fight Pass. But yeah. We'll be the ones who talk about the most out of anyone else in the media world.
For sure. Rick, you got anything coming up on the horizons, or are you going to lay low till UFC 226 gets ramped up?
I'm going to save it up for 226. MMA Nerd is in slumber, but he'll be busy once the that pay-per-view card comes, and I'm going to stop referring to myself in the third person.
All right. It worked out pretty good for a guy named Dwayne Johnson once, so I'm pretty sure it'll have the same effect for you. You can follow me on Twitter, Rob M. Vallejos, RobMVallejos. Follow MMA Torch on Twitter, at MMA Torch, and the show proper one, at MMA Livecast. MMALIVECAST. Send us an email. We got two great emails we read on this show. We want more from you guys. That's also at MMA Live, excuse me, MMA Livecast at gmail.com. Show's gone long. I think I'm losing my fastball a little bit here, guys. And check out all the Torch related brands, PW Podcast, PW Torch Livecast, and of course, Go VIP. Learn your history, go through those back issues, and be the smartest wrestling fan that anybody knows. For Rick, I am Robert, and we will talk to you next week.
PW Torch Livecast listeners, this show can be ad-free and commercial-free with a VIP membership. VIP members not only enjoy all 7 episodes of the PW Torch Livecast with no commercials and the ads and plugs edited out, but they also get ad-free additions to the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling post shows and the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling podcast. Also, part of a VIP membership and exclusive shows such as the Every Single Day Wade Keller Hotline, the 3 times a week Bruce Mitchell audio show, including a new weekly mailbag edition with Bruce, The Fix with Todd Martin that I also host, post-pay-per-view roundtables that I host, and other shows on specific topics, including the new Talking Honor podcast with Lola and Harley discussing the latest in ROH, including a review of the latest TV show. And now we are proud to announce that Alan Cunahan, known as Alan4L, has brought his talents to PW Torch after many years at The Observer. And there's a lot of excitement about his new weekly show called Alan4L's Pro Wrest Paradise, with the best coverage of New Japan, all of Japan, the UK indie scene, including the US indie scene. So be sure to become a PW Torch VIP member for as little as $8.25 a month on average, and have multiple new VIP exclusive and ad-free podcasts every day on customizable feeds on your iPhone and Android device. For more information and our sign-up form, go to pwtorch.com/govip, and you'll find out what else comes with VIP membership, including a weekly newsletter, over 1,500 back issues of the Pro Wrestling Torch weekly newsletter that started it all, ad-free access to our mobile and desktop sites, and more. Full lineup, full details, and the sign-up form at pwtorch.com/govip.
No.